Welcome to the Hackberry House of Chosun. My name is Bob, and reading today from the Scarlet Threads, a history of a mystery known in the Bible as Babylon. Now, we've traced it all the way through the Bible. We've traced it through a whole lot of history. Now we're coming to some history that many of us have heard about, if are not even familiar with. It's about Hitler and World War II. We're going to back up just for a moment, though, to the end of World War I. Do you remember the Habsburg dynasty? Well, that's crumbled. Rome is worried about its future. I'm talking about Roman Catholicism here. It's worried about its future prospects. Protestant areas of Czechoslovakia, Orthodox portions of Yugoslavia, Orthodox Russia, they're all European threats to the Roman bloc of security. Can the Habsburgs revive? Well, in July of 1917, the Great War, they called it World War I, was ended. Austria-Hungary sees nothing but negative in its future and tries for a separate peace with the Allies. Emperor Charles of Europe sends a letter of filial obedience to Pope Benedict XV, in which he leaves to his august authority the decision of the sacrifices which the Austria-Hungary Empire had to make to obtain a quick peace. Well, it doesn't work. But we see here again the involvement of the papacy in this war. Charles is defeated, but refuses to abdicate. Now, he's the emperor of that Holy Roman Empire. He says, I'm not stepping down. He takes refuge in Switzerland. He's supported by Hungarians who begin the formation of an army. He actually invades Hungary and almost wins it back, but no, not this time. He's captured, dethroned, and deported to the island of Madeira. Before he leaves, though, Charles has planned a confederation of Catholic states over which he believes that he's going to reign. For example, in Yugoslavia, there's Catholic Croatia. In Czechoslovakia, there's Catholic Slovakia. In Germany, there's Bavaria and Alsace-Lorraine. And all of Austria, and all of Hungary. Some say he dreams his son Otto will reign. Otto is in fact being trained for that job in those days. June 1936, he's quoted as saying, the time for taking a decisive action has come, and I'm ready to enter the country at any time. Well, supported by Mussolini, and the reigning pope, Pope Pius XI, he's as good as in when another rising star sets him aside temporarily. Rome decides that Adolf Hitler may serve its purposes just as well. Mr. Hitler is born April 20, 1889, in Catholic Austria. He moves to a Catholic part of Germany at age 3. At 10, he temporarily thought of becoming a monk, but the mood passed quickly. But there is a pattern here. This young man is raised in the Catholic Church. His father and mother are essentially cousins, and they need permission from the Pope to marry. The mother, in particular, is a faithful Catholic, completely devoted to the faith and the teachings of Rome. As to Adolf, well, he was skeptical about the church from an early date and persistently annoyed, I'm quoting here, his religious instructor in the Realschule. His father had long been suspicious of the church. I'm quoting from one named Smith. We've talked about him before. None of these negatives keep him from being confirmed at the age of 15, confirmed in the Catholic Church. The process had no effect on him, but there can be no question as to the intent of his mother to make young Adolf into a good Catholic. The closest thing, though, to religious enthusiasm that Hitler experiences is his devotion to the anti-Semite Richard Wagner. Wagner, we would say, Richard Wagner and his music. You've heard of Wagner, I'm sure, or Wagner, if you've studied music at all. A great in the music profession, but a very anti-Semitic person. Parsifal, the Wagnerian opera, which tells of a mythical Christian youth. Listen now. Wagner's opera, Parsifal, is about a Christian youth who, through many struggles, does the noble deed that he has set out to do. And that, we are told, was Hitler's favorite. That's what Hitler was going to do. He even says, and we quote, "Out of Parsifal, I make a religion." Now, he wasn't too much into Roman Catholicism, but he was into religion of this sort. And it came from a Catholic anti-Semite musician in his play, in his opera, Parsifal, about a Christian. You know, I keep saying it over and over to be sure that you understand this. One night, after he has seen another of Wagner's epic, based on the life of a Roman conqueror who became a dictator and sought to restore the ancient greatness of Rome. Hello, that sounds familiar, doesn't it? Adolf Hitler burst into rapturous eloquence, quote, I quote from Charles Flood's book, Hitler, The Path to Power. His eyes were feverish with excitement. He spoke in a transported way of a future day when he would be entrusted with a special mission. So you see how, as a young man, he's inspired by heroes who conquered, even a Christian hero who conquered, who brought greatness to his land again. Well, after the difficulties and rejections through which all world figures pass, Hitler begins his rise to power. During these years, he's read much about anti-Semitism. And I don't need to tell my listeners the prime source of anti-Jewish feeling for a young Catholic boy of that day. And it wasn't Richard Wagner. Do I need to tell you that it was Rome itself, who was still very anti-Semitic? Racism was not merely tolerated in the pre-Hitler era. I mean, not pre the man, but pre the dictator Hitler. As he was growing up, it was not merely tolerated by many. It was promoted as something godly. When Houston Stewart Chamberlain writes The Foundations of the 19th Century, which was a purely racist view of history, Kaiser Wilhelm II tells him, "It was God who sent your book to the German people." And rising Adolf Hitler, who sees in Chamberlain a hero of heroes, since Chamberlain not only wrote that book, but has married the daughter of his great god, Wagner. So Hitler is given the greatest of acceptances when Chamberlain passes on this compliment, quote from Chamberlain, "My belief in the Germans has always been strong, although it had ebbed for a while, but you, Adolf Hitler, have changed the state of my soul. That Germany could give birth to a Hitler in a time of direst need is proof of her vitality. May God protect you." Oh, so we're still talking about a very religious nation, a religious atmosphere in the world. It was false religion, but it was religion. God was in it. So God was involved in this Hitler thing? Well, the Roman Church seems to have thought so, though for a short time she opposed Nazism. She did. And now I quote, "After Hitler came to power, all this was changed. The bishops revised their attitude, and a concordat was signed with the Holy See." Remember the concordat with Mussolini? This is the same kind of thing. An agreement. We recognize you. You recognize us. We're good. So are we talking about the same Hitler here? How can the Lord and his church be in any way implicated in the Nazi movement? Would your church have signed a concordat, an agreement, a permission slip, as it were, for Adolf Hitler? How can it be that God is involved in this? Well, Hitler gives a partial answer in his famous work, Mein Kampf. Now, this is from Adolf himself, page 118 in the version that I read. It says, "By warding off the Jews, I am fighting for the Lord's work." Spiritual sentiments from a guy like Hitler seem unimaginable. But in fact, this tyrant did believe he was doing God a service. By the way, politicians can use the name of God, and you'll believe that they are in love with the same Lord that you're in love with. But you'd be wrong. Politicians do what politicians have to do. Well, the world's greatest Jew hater says this: "We must see to it that God's will is not simply talked about, but that God's will is also fulfilled." Adolf Hitler, doing the will of God. What's the will of God for my life? Exterminate the Jews. Oh, okay, I'll do that, God. I agree with Hitler's statement. We've got to see to it that God's will is not simply talked about, but that God's will is also fulfilled. Oh, I agree. Sounds very Christian to me. Church, are you listening? Out of the mouth of the great deceiver of Germany comes gospel truth. Beware. Rome agreed with the Hitler philosophies too. And Rome is eloquently silent during much of the massacre that we have labeled the Holocaust. By the way, Holocaust means burnt offering. It was Hitler's offering to God, do you think? Rome didn't say a whole lot during that time. After all, they've got a concordat with Mr. Hitler. De Rosa, we've talked about De Rosa. He was a Catholic, but oh, he knew what Catholicism was about. I wouldn't be surprised if he dropped out of that church eventually. Page 196 of the book that we've already talked about. Quote, "When Mussolini began putting pressure on the Jewish community, Pius initiated his habit of saying nothing. On June 4, 1940, Italy entered the war on Hitler's side. By the end of 1941, three-quarters of Italian Jews had lost their livelihood. The scene was set for what many, Catholics included, consider the most shameful of all the papal encyclicals, and that is the one that was never written. Jews were being systematically victimized and in many well-known cases killed. Not one unequivocal word of condemnation issued from the Vatican. This silence, many say, was worse than any heresy." Still quoting, "The mass exterminations of Jews were now common knowledge. The Archbishop of Canterbury said, 'It is a horror beyond what imagination can grasp.' There was one man in the world whose witness Hitler feared, since many in his armies were Catholics. And that one man did not speak. In the face of what Winston Churchill was to call probably the greatest and most horrible single crime ever committed in the whole history of the world, he chose to stay neutral. The head of the German church in Rome, recognizing that the roundup of Jews in Rome was a key moment, Rome now, they're in Rome, rounding up Jews right under the Pope's nose, he informed the German command that the arrest must stop. Well, good for you. Otherwise, the Pope would have to make an open stand, which would serve the anti-German propaganda as a weapon against us. Jews were being snatched practically under the Pope's window. I'm still quoting. He would have no alternative but to protest. Well, these fears proved groundless. Pius XII said nothing at all. De Rosa concludes, could not His Holiness, and I use his words, not my own, who declared infallibly in 1950 that a Jewess, a female Jew, was taken up body and soul into heaven, could he not have said authoritatively in 1942, 8 years earlier, that her race was not to be annihilated for being Jewish? Oh, boy. I'll leave you with that thought. There's much more about Hitler. I'll spend another day on him and World War II. But I leave you with that. Can I just read that again? Could not the Pope, who declared infallibly in 1950 that a Jewess was taken up body and soul into heaven, have said authoritatively in 1942 that her race was not to be annihilated for being Jewish? This is the Hackberry House of Chosun. Lord willing, we will get to talk again real soon. Bye-bye.